You are Locked On MLB, your daily podcast on Major League Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Tuesday, April 24th, and this is Locked On MLB, your daily podcast, covering Major League Baseball as a whole on a national scale. I am your host, Tommy Stokey, and today we're going to talk about the big main matchup of the day, the Chicago Cubs versus the Cleveland Indians. Obviously, a rematch from the World Series in 2016 when the Indians blew a 3-1 lead and the Cubs won the first World Series since 1908, their first World Series. So I want to take a look at where they've been, where they've gone since that World Series, and take a look into the future and see where those two teams are headed. And then in our other segment of the day, we'll have two segments today. Our other segment, I want to focus on the Baltimore Orioles. Justin McGuire over at Locked On Orioles today talked about how it's time to sell, it's time to break up the ship and tear it down and start over, and it's rebuild time in Baltimore. And I want to look at comparing them to the Cincinnati Reds and where the Cincinnati Reds went wrong in their rebuild and how the Orioles can avoid some of those mistakes, or is it too late? So those are our two topics today, but let's get started with that World Series rematch. So the Cleveland Indians enter this series at 12-8, first place in the AL Central. The Cubs are 10-9, fourth place in the NL Central, two games back of the Brewers and Cardinals. It is April 24th, so the standings really don't matter, but that's where these two teams stand so far. The Indians made the playoffs last year. Lost in the first round to the Yankees after blowing a 2-0 lead, and the Yankees came back and won that series. The Cubs won the first round against the Nationals, another one that was kind of that I believe was comeback fashion, and then, you know, just were dominated by the Dodgers. And I don't think anyone really thought the Cubs had that great of a chance last year to do much damage in the playoffs or go to the World Series or make it. Last year was pretty much the year of the Dodgers. Not a lot went right for the Cubs in terms of production. You had the hangover that kind of was the cloud that they were walking underneath all season, where they had a battle against the Brewers. They needed to make that trade for Jose Quintana as a bit of a boost. Woke up in the second half, won the division, and then had that playoff run where they did beat the Nationals but then fell to the Dodgers. The Indians, I think they had the more disappointing year last year in the sense that last year should have been their turn to win the World Series. They were my pick. I thought that they were the best equipped team for the postseason. I think similar things this year, but the window for the Indians is a lot different than the window for the Cubs. And so that's why I think the pressure is on Cleveland this year, especially after last year when that was a wasted opportunity, you know, and what they have building around them. With the Astros and Yankees, the American League is only getting tougher. The Red Sox are still there. I mean, people kind of forget about them, I think. And so it's going to get tougher in the American League. And when you look at the contract situation, the farm system situation for Cleveland, I don't know how much longer their window is going to be for that championship. I thought that they had it last year with the starting rotation, with the bullpen, and it didn't work out. I still think that this year, they were my World Series pick. It was chalk, but I still believe in what this team has right now. But let's take a look at what they have moving forward, because if it wasn't last year, if it's not going to be this year, then could this be their last chance? You have Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez behind the plate that are locked up until 2021, but both guys are more defensive players. And who knows if Gomes will be there beyond 2019. He has an option, 2 years, $20 million, it looks like. I'm on SpoTrack right now. Perez has cheaper options in 21 and 22, but they also have a catcher in Francisco Mejia coming up at some point. Whether he's good enough defensively to stick, whether he's a DH, whatever, he's one of those young guys that'll come up and contribute. You look at first base Yonder Alonso, they have him for 2 years, could possibly be three. Jason Kipnis, that's a big contract for two more years, making 13.6 this year, 14.6 next year, an option for 16.5 in 2020. At this point, looks like it would get declined. Jose Ramirez, they locked him up at a team-friendly extension. Lindor, under control until 2022, and I doubt he goes anywhere anyway. You lose Michael Brantley after this year, which health concerns and the price tag. I mean, $12 million, that looks like, I think some people look at that as a mistake, bringing him back on that, especially when you could have spent that money potentially other places this offseason. Bradley Zimmer looks like the center fielder of the future. He's going to be there. Tyler Naquin. And then the other corner outfield spot, you have Chisenhall and Brandon Guyer. So no long-term stuff there. You get to the starting pitching. Corey Kluber, you have him until 2021. Carlos Carrasco, 2021. Trevor Bauer, Danny Salazar, 2021. Mike Clevenger, 2023. So your starting rotation is going to be intact for a couple of years here. But then you get to the bullpen, and this is where they are really going to have to do a bit of a makeover this offseason, because you're going to lose Cody Allen will be a free agent. Andrew Miller will be a free agent. Zach McAllister, Matt Belisle, also free agents. How are you going to replace those two guys in the back end of your pen? Will they spend the money to keep them? Do they only bring one of them back? What does the reliever market look like next year? And how much money do they have to spend? Because if they have, you know, one side of it is the bullpen is sometimes the easiest thing to rebuild because of how you can find diamonds in the rough and all that. But at the same time, is that something that you want to risk? You look at the Washington Nationals last year, how many games did they lose because they didn't have a set bullpen until they went out and got Sean Doolittle, Ryan Madsen, Brandon Kinsler? So that's going to be a big question mark for the Indians, where this could be their last kind of window year, again, depending on what they want to do, what kind of money they want to spend to keep these guys, bring these guys back, and replace them. When you go to the Cubs, their window is open much wider, and I think they're it's a little safer to predict them being around and having those chances to get back to the World Series compared to the Indians. I mean, just looking at the roster right now, Contreras, you have until 2023 in pre-arb, or you have arbitration starting in 2020. You know, they've tried to extend him, and those extensions obviously haven't been done. Maybe they get done before he reaches free agency, but at this point, Contreras has rejected those. And that's not different from any other player, really. That's not different from any other organization. Organizations try to lock these guys up all the time. The Cubs' problem might be that so many of these guys are confident in themselves that they're not going to take these deals. Javier Baez was another one they tried to lock up, and he rejected an offer, I know for a fact, 2 years ago. But again, these things happen kind of all the time, and it looks like the Cubs will ride these out. So the Cubs' window looks like 2021. And obviously could extend past there, but might be the best chance. With Rizzo under control until 2021, Javier Baez, 2022, would be a free agent. Chris Bryant, free agent, 2022. Sounds weird to say 2022. Man, we're getting old. Addison Russell, 2022. Kyle Schwarber, 2022. Almora, 2023. Did I miss Ian Happ? Is Ian Happ not on here? Where's Ian Happ? Maybe Ian Happ's not on here. Anyway, he's under control for a while. One of the big questions is Jason Hayward. What happens there? There's no way in hell that Jason Hayward's going to opt out of his contract. I have some trade ideas, but I first want to get input from others before I bring them out into the trade machine of the public and see what you think. But he can only be traded in 19 and 20 on a limited no-trade clause, it looks like, according to Spotrac. And once he reaches 21, 22, it's a full no trade. He's making $23.5 million, $24.5 million. So what does he turn into? What do they do with that next year in terms of Bryce Harper? I don't think that Jason Hayward's contract is going to have any impact on whether or not they bring in a guy like Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. But that core being in place until 2021 is a much safer bet than what the Indians have in place. And that's before getting to the pitching staff, where you have John Lester, and we've talked before that he doesn't have to be a top-of-the-rotation guy, even though he's making $27.5 million the next 2 years, $20 million in 2020. If he can be just, you know, 160 innings, 170 solid innings a year, be that mid-rotation guy, they're fine. Now, they need better results out of Yu Darvish. Again, it's April 24th, so let's not write his book just yet. But they've got him until 2022, depending on his player option, whether he accepts that or not in 2020. Tyler Chatwood in the rotation, Kyle Hendricks, those two will be free agents in 2021, as well as Jose Quintana, who also has to be better. So most of your rotation is set until 2021, which means that's what this roster looks like. And a lot of things can change in that time span. But that's why it was a bigger mistake, not a mistake, but a bigger missed opportunity in 2016 for the Indians than the Cubs, because the Cubs are set up better for the next 3 or 4 years to get their chance to get back to the World Series. Plus, they won one already. So even if they don't win another, I don't know that you can call what they have a failure, as long as they're getting there and getting their chances and getting into the what can sometimes be a crapshoot in the playoffs. If you get one, that's good. They want more, obviously. They'll have their chances. The Indians, I'm not so sure. If the Indians don't do it this year, I think it'll be tougher for them, especially as their division gets better, the Astros get better, the Yankees get better. The Indians are definitely going to be in a tougher spot than the Cubs moving forward. And they already blew the 3-1 lead and don't have 2016 to lean on. Let's talk Baltimore Orioles and what is next for them and some mistakes that they can learn from, or have they run out of time to learn from, that other teams have made, specifically the Cincinnati Reds. Now, entering the season, I think most people knew that the Orioles were not going to be good enough to contend with the Yankees, the Red Sox, or realistically anybody else in the AL East. Yet they kept everything together. They had some options that they could have traded. They had those options last year that they could have traded, but didn't. Wanted to run it back and see what would happen. And predictably, it has not worked. So as they talked about today on Locked On Orioles, it's just time to move on. It's time to tear this thing down and start over. And whatever word you want to use for it, it's time to rebuild. And it's been that time for a while. But now, at 6-17 and 12 games back of the Boston Red Sox, I don't know how you can say that, you know, there's any other option but to rebuild. And that was the obvious move heading into the year, and now it's just even more obvious. But I wanted to compare it with the Reds, because the Reds are a team that was kind of caught in the middle, and they were another one that they went for it instead of trading options when they could have. As a result, they got a late start on their rebuild. They didn't get value back that they could have because they held on to guys too long, and I wonder if that's going to happen to the Baltimore Orioles. So first, let's look at the Reds. Which the Reds won 90 games in 2013. And I'm not really sure how they did that. They had a pitching staff of Matt Latos, Bronson Arroyo, Homer Bailey, Mike Leake, and Tony Cingrani, with Johnny Cueto mixed in there as well. Their bullpen was unreal with J.J. Hoover, Chapman. They have Sean Marshall down there. Jonathan Broxton was there. Sam LeCure was there. And it was kind of a lights-out bullpen. They had Shin-Shu Chu, who had an unreal year that year, 423 on base, 21 home runs. 145 OPS plus. Joey Votto was really good that year. Jay Bruce was good. And then they had Zach Cozart, who had a 284 on base. They had Todd Frazier, 721 OPS. Brandon Phillips, 706 OPS. Devin Mesoraco, 649 OPS. Chris Heisey in left field, 694 OPS. And they had no bench. This was a year before Billy Hamilton came up. So first of all, I don't know how that team won 90-some-odd games. But then you get to 2014, and they finished 76-86. But I think the big question was at the trade deadline, they stood pat, and they didn't move anybody. And at the time, they were 500. And I just think you look at that first missed opportunity of, you know, whether it was not moving a Cueto, a Frazier, a Cozart, you know, maybe Alfredo Simon, Aroldis Chapman. I mean, you have all these guys that could have been moved, and so I went and looked at the 2014 trade deadline to see what kind of other moves happened, and, you know, Andrew Miller, the Red Sox traded Andrew Miller and get Eduardo Rodriguez back, who was a good prospect and is now a good young starter that the Reds could use right now. And in a similar situation, the Orioles held on to Zach Britton and maybe held on to him too long, whereas they could have traded him last year but shot down medicals with the Astros. They probably could have traded him this offseason, but then he blew out his Achilles, so now we'll see what return they get there. But by waiting on moving him, let's just say they miss out on a potential Eduardo Rodriguez kind of guy. And there are other factors in here. The Orioles have to figure out how to develop some of these guys that they get. But that's one instance. You know, an outfielder like Gerardo Parra, the Brewers get him for Mitch Haniger and Anthony Bonda. The Diamondbacks turn Bonda into Steven Souza this year, and they turn Haniger into they sent him with Segura for Ketel Marte and Taijuan Walker. And so Haniger's been killing it, but that's just another example of an outfielder like Parra. That's what they got in 2014. So those were the two that really stood out to me then, that if the Reds would have made a move then, who knows what they could have gotten in return. You get a head start on your rebuild in terms of when you're losing, you get a better draft pick. You're restocking the farm system with the talent you get back. So the Reds kind of blew it there. And then in 2015, they win 64 games. That's when you see guys like Chapman traded, and obviously his stock was hit even more once he had the domestic violence incident. And so there were some other factors there, but the Reds really missed out by not fully committing to the rebuild, thus missing out on what would have been better draft picks, missing out on what would have been better prospects. You know, the Johnny Cueto trade, they moved him at the deadline. That return doesn't look good right now. So there were a lot of missteps so far. That doesn't mean that the Reds are ultimately aren't going to be any good. We talked about that last week with Brian Price being fired, that doesn't really mean anything in terms of the rebuild. But you look at the Orioles, and as I scroll down and look at some of their guys who are going to be free agents, the big one, Manny Machado, they could have been more aggressive in trading him last year when they weren't good. They could have been more aggressive in trading him this year. And part of this is that, yes, we don't know what some of these offers are, and if they're not very good offers, then you wait for a better offer. How good is that offer going to be in June or July versus what it would have been in the offseason? Don't know. Some would say teams are more desperate in July. Some would say that you have more teams interested in January. So we'll find out whether it was a mistake or not in not moving him when they could have in December, January, or if they made the right decision, depending on what they end up doing. I think it would be a terrible decision if they try to keep him to give the false premise that they have a chance of re-signing him. I think that would be an awful mistake. I think it would be a huge mistake to try to say we'll give him a qualifying offer and get a draft pick compensation back and can say that he left us or whatever, rather than saying, oh, we had to trade Manny Machado. I know that sometimes ownership can struggle with that, but we'll see. The Machado one's going to be the biggest one. They're going to lose Adam Jones. He's a little trickier because it looks like he has a no-trade clause. Britton, it looks like they messed up because, you know, how much – what are we going to see when he comes back from that Achilles injury? And then the other one that will probably have some value is Brad Brock. So, you know, I don't know that the Orioles are going to be restocked enough to have a future where you're like, okay, I can see where this is going. I think there are still plenty of question marks, especially with the way that that organization is run sometimes and the way that it's developed its players and still some of the terrible contracts that are on the books. I mean, you know, I'm not going to call the Alex Cobb contract terrible yet, even though it doesn't really coincide with their direction, but mainly the Chris Davis making $21 million a year for at least the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I mean, that is certainly not going to look good. So we'll see. You know, hopefully Orioles fans are hoping that they don't turn into the Reds where you have this rebuild that sometimes lacks direction, a rebuild that starts 2 years too late. But I think Orioles fans, I think fans in general in 2018 are aware of when it's time to reset and rebuild, and the Orioles are certainly there, so we'll see what happens. That'll be it for today, Tuesday's episode. Check out Justin McGuire, Locked On Orioles, and what his take is on Manny Machado and this rebuild. You can follow me on Twitter at StokeyTommy, subscribe on iTunes. We are also on Google Play and Spotify, and check us out at LockedOnMLB.com.